this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness in Dentistry. This is going to be a great episode. We are going to talk about not what you'd think makes a smoother practice. We're going to talk about why over-communication is actually the secret to a smoother practice. I am Dr. Kyle Stanley, one of your hosts. I am a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and a researcher, and I am joined with your other host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. Martin is a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and an author. And together, Martin and I have helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. So you don't want to miss today. This is going to be all about over-communicating and how this makes for a smoother practice. Now, if you want to spend 2 days and go deeper with us, make sure to come to our live in-person transformational CE course. It's on August 8th and 9th. Now, for those of you that are listeners of the podcast, a few episodes ago, we told you it was another day. We had to change that because I have a family wedding. So it's now August 8th and 9th, and it's going to be in Irvine, California, the same place we've done our previous courses. So we really look forward to having you guys there. Just go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to the links, and you'll see our Lightside Live event. So Martin, how are you?
I am good. We've had a little recording hiatus, so it's good to be back in the saddle.
We have. I mean, I've been, I was in Texas and I was in Oklahoma, and you were all over the place, both for personal and for professional speaking events and non-speaking events. We had our live course a few weeks ago, which we're going to do an episode about soon. And this topic is so underutilized, why over-communication is the secret to a smoother practice. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, so many of our colleagues, they'll say things like, well, you know, I told them once, and, you know, shouldn't they listen? Isn't that their job, et cetera? Which, of course, makes a huge assumption that you communicated effectively.
So
now,
true.
We're not talking about the situations where you have said it 20 times. We're not talking about that, but how many times have you ever had a situation where you thought you communicated and it just didn't work? And then you find out later, oh, oops, they heard me differently, or I didn't even say what I thought I did, right?
Yeah. And this over-communication, you know, this is something that you and I harp on all the time. Mm-hmm. But it's like, whether you're talking to patients, whether you're talking to team members, whether you're talking to your lab technician, whether you're talking to your husband or wife or your kids, it's all the same thing. It's like we need to people need to understand where we're coming from. We need to set these boundaries. We need to set these expectations. And it all comes down to communication. When I look back at my biggest mistakes, my biggest downfalls in dentistry, my time when I had depression and anxiety and thought about quitting dentistry, when I boil all of that down, now having, of course, 20/20 vision in hindsight, I see it was all bad communication.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
You could say, well, you know, that patient was a little ridiculous, or, you know, this team member was doing this or that. But really, had I communicated better, had I set that boundary or that expectation differently,
right,
been a different outcome.
Well, not only that, but you just made me think of something else, which is because you were talking about that patient that, you know, is a bit of a challenge. And we've talked in previous episodes about my denture checklist for the patients when I was in practice. And so, you know, over-communication also gives you a tool, because I won't go into
reference,
the whole thing.
Right?
Yeah, because I won't go into the whole story, but basically it was like I was doing a lot of full dentures. And everybody kept asking, am I getting my denture this visit, when we were only like two visits out of six in, whatever it was. And so I created this checklist. And why did I do that? It was less about that, and it was more about giving me the ability to then say, okay, well, last time we talked about this, here's the sheet with both of our signatures on it. And we talked about how this is appointment number 3 of 6 or 3 of 5. And so it makes things so much easier when you are communicating almost, I'll go ahead and say it, almost to a fault, over communicating, because it, in many circumstances, it gives you something to fall back on when something goes squirrely.
Well, it's almost like your patients, or again, this could be for anybody. Let's say we're talking about patients. Your patients should be able to almost recite the things that you say, like, okay, Dr. Stanley, I know you told me we're going to do this, then we're going to do the graft, then we're going to wait 6 months, then we're going to, I know you told me last time, you told me the previous time before. It's like, you know how when you have a friend that is in crisis, right? Let's say they just broke up with their boyfriend, or they lost a dog, or something terrible happens. I always go on the idea of contact them until they tell you stop contacting me, right?
That's why
And
we're friends, because
yeah.
people yell at me for that. Not the people I'm connecting, but like they're like, why are you texting them every day? Because
Yeah.
their dog just died. Like,
Yes.
hello.
Right. And you almost wanted to get to that point where they're like, I know, Dr. Stanley, like you told me that we have to do it this way, and that's how it goes, and that's how it goes. When you have that type of overcommunication, I mean, a good example that we just talked about in our Lightside Live course is this idea of a try-in. And I have done this in my practice to the point of where that is the lingo. So for those of you that haven't heard this before, whether we are delivering a crown, whether we are, giving the patient the final denture, whether it is a night guard, an implant crown, whatever, everything is a try-in. So what that means is, Mrs. Jones, today we took the final impression for this crown. If everything works out at the lab, the next time you come in, we're going to try in this crown. Sometimes it takes two or three tries, and we really want to make sure the color's good, that it touches the adjacent teeth well, that your bite feels good, that all the margins look great. So just expect it may take a few tries, but we're going to try it in next time. Now, if it fits and everything's good, you're going to leave with it that day. However, what we've seen is that it takes a few tries. Now, the next time they come in, if it doesn't fit, they go, oh, okay, well, it looks like we have to send it back, right? Yeah, okay, I'm going to send it back at the margin was a little open. And the patient's not mad. And this has to be communicated every time. So then let's say at the end of that appointment where you tried it in and it didn't fit, then what do? You say the same thing. Okay, Mrs. Jones, I know we tried this crown in today and didn't fit. I'm going to send this back to the lab. They're going to remake this and try to fix everything. Next time you come in, we're going to try in the crown again. Now, I want to make sure that the contacts are good, the bite is good, the shade, everything looks nice. If all that is good, you'll leave with it that day. However, it usually takes a few tries. You almost want to get to the point of where they're like, okay, you told, I get it. I get it, Dr. Stanley. I know we're going to try it in, right? And similarly, when they go to the front office to schedule their next appointment, you do not want your front office to then say, Mrs. Jones, next time you come in, looks like you're going to get your crown. Because what if it doesn't happen? So it's this idea of under-promising, over-delivering, or over-communicating instead of under-communicating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. This comes up a lot, and we're going into the summer, so this is very applicable too, about over communications and expectations when the doctor is away. So when the doctor is away, are the mice going to play? Well, if you think about leaving the practice for vacation from a concept of an autoresponder, what kinds of instructions are you giving your team? How are you communicating that? What kind of expectations are you levying? What kind of boundaries are you establishing so that they understand what's expected? Now, if you're going to look at me and say, well, it's in the employee handbook, no, I don't like it's important, it's there, yes.
Correct.
However, if you're going away for a week, let's say, which many don't do, which I suggest you do. We've talked about planning in the past and that, there's no reason not to. But what are the expectations? And what do you expect them to do? When do you expect them to come in? When do you expect them to leave? What do you expect them to do? How do you expect them to report back what it is that they accomplished? And if in the beginning, let's say you have never done this kind of thing, might people feel like it's a bit of micromanaging? Possibly, right? But what we're looking to do is create a cultural shift. And truthfully, it's a two-way street. right? So if there was a discussion in a team meeting relative to something you as the leader doctor needed to do, then you need to mirror that same behavior and say, okay, so what I've heard the team say is, I need to take this to-do item to get back to everybody by next Wednesday to let everybody know what the three options are for our holiday party. And you damn well better do it, because if you don't, you have no leg to stand on to hold them accountable, despite the fact you're the one that writes the checks.
It's a great example what you're talking about with the doctor going away on vacation. And this happens a lot. Most dental practices are single owners, and we hope from this podcast that they're taking vacation. And I would even argue that I think people want to know what is expected of them.
Yes,
I
100%.
think patients want to know what's expected of them. Team wants to know. Dogs want to know. Kids want to know. Even spouses want to know. Like, how easy is it if your husband or wife says, I would love that when I come home, you have this, this, and this done. Now, there may be some people that go like, oh, well, they're trying to boss me around. But you say, look, I had all this stuff done. And like, you feel good about yourself, right? Oh, this is what they
Absolutely.
wanted, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that with team members, it's the same way. You know, you're the team guru, of course, but team members want to know, okay, the doctor's away. Let's say you're a new team member, and this is the first time the doctor's ever been away. You come in, you're going, well,
What
I'm
do
the
we do?
assistant. What? You know, usually I'm assisting the doctor. So you're looking for stuff to do. So you're going, okay, I guess I'll clean the sterilizer. Okay, I guess I'll try to organize some of the lab cases for next week. I mean, you may be 2 hours into a 40-hour week and say, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Absolutely.
But
Absolutely.
if the doctor or the office manager or whoever came to you and said, we would love for you to reorganize all the shade guides. You know, they've kind of all been out of order. We want to put them in order of value. That's actually how we do it in my practice, not in order of A's and B's and C's, but we
Oh,
do
I
it in
love
value.
that.
And you're working for Lita, that's like
I used to teach this stuff.
right up your alley, right? But knowing what to do, you could really feel like you're helping the team. You're much less likely to then go do things that would get you in trouble, right? Like take a 2-hour lunch or go look on your phone or whatever when you have things to do.
And I would even create some ownership in the situation. So let's say you come up with a list and you review the list, and then you say, so look, I think this would really take up the majority of the week. If for whatever reason you really get ahead of this, what are the kinds of things, additional things you would like to accomplish? Right? And then agree on those. And to put a bit of research to this, for those of you who are regular listeners, you've heard me say before that when our patients are in the chair and their mouths are open, what we do is unique. And everything that gets them in the chair, to the chair, getting them to say yes in the chair and paying their bill out of the chair isn't. And we need to follow the research and the realities of every other business and profession. So you've heard me talk about Project Aristotle before. This was from Google. They followed 100 teams for the course over the course of a year, so several thousand people, looking to see what drove cohesion and productivity. The two number one conclusions were structure and clarity drove high performance over and over and over again. That's what we're talking about. Structure of what it is you're doing, clarity of expectations, done.
Yeah, I mean that summarizes this whole idea. With this idea of, it's such a great example when the doctor he or she goes away, setting that structure of what they're going to do, the clarity of what is expected, and now we have to remember that we have to follow up with it too.
Amen.
So when you get back, if you're the practice owner, then we have to have a check. Or we have to have a meeting with each person. Tell me how it went. What struggles did you have? Oh, you couldn't do this because this part was missing, or you know, the lab was late on this, so you couldn't get that ready. And have that. So it's like we set the expectation, we do it, we have the clarity of what happens. And something we've talked about before many times too is having that psychological safety when you're setting it to make sure that they understand what you're saying.
Yeah, totally. And maybe even gamify it. Like, let's say everybody has their shall we say, tasks to do for the week, and if we get X percent done, we're gonna do this, and if we get it all done, we're all gonna go out to dinner. I don't know. Whatever works for your team, whatever's appropriate. But and again, I can just hear our colleagues. Well, isn't this their job? Well, it is, but what you're trying to do is create a culture of commitment, create a culture of accountability. And so, not acknowledging that and just saying, well, it's their job. Well, how is that supportive, right? And the other thing I can hear people say, which I very much respect, because a lot of my clients are single owner doctors. And there's so much on our plates as single owner doctors, whether you have an office manager or not. And so if you're extremely busy, which those category of folks are, then turn to your team. So you're going on vacation well in advance. Don't tell me you don't, right? And then turn to
Let's
your team.
hope. Let's hope they planned it.
A month or two in advance and go, hey, listen, I know y'all know that I'm taking a vacation in July. And so I'm going to be gone a week. I want you all to be productive and have a good time. So by next team meeting, well in advance, I'd like to know in writing what you would like to commit to during that week. And then also a couple parking lot items just in case you're really quick and you're looking for other things to do. Because not only do I want you to have fun while I'm gone, but this is a business and I'd like you to be productive as well. How does that sound? Now all of a sudden they're picking the things they want to do. And if they forget that, for example, you're leaving in July and that, the sterilizer needs to be cleaned at that point. So you remind them and then they put it on the list. But, there's multiple ways to skin this cat relative to getting the buy-in and the engagement.
Well, structure and clarity, again, those are such cornerstones of this idea of why over communication is the secret to a smoother practice. It's the same thing with a patient, and we go back to patients or teams because I think these are the biggest mistakes or these are the biggest problems with communication in the dental atmosphere. But with patients, it should be the same thing. Right? It should be a structured, I'm thinking structured of how you talk to patients. There should be so much clarity that the patient should know what to expect. What to
Absolutely.
expect good, what to expect bad, what are the risks, what may be additional fees, what are the time. I mean, this is why I created a whole course called the Treatment Agreement. It's really just a structured way to have a conversation with patients for these bigger cases or longer cases. And why did I do this? Because I made all the mistakes. I had these patients that were, let's say, all on X patients, or they were, I did a lot of perioperosis denture stuff. So, we're extracting teeth, then we're grafting, and then we're placing implants, and then we're doing provisionals, and then we do another provisional, and then we're checking the bite, and then we're delivering the framework. We're checking the framework, then we're taking photos, we're delivering the final, then we're doing a night guard. So many appointments, so much time. Some of these times, like especially when I was working with Sasha Jovanovic, they could be 3 year treatment plans. 3 years when you're talking about extracting, waiting, grafting, implants. Sometimes we couldn't always place implants at the time. And it got to the point in some of these relationships with these patients where they're like, when am I getting my teeth? And, or what's happening? I don't even know what's next. We did these grafts and it's been 9 months now. And what, are we placing implants next? What's happening? And the whole goal of that treatment agreement was to make it so clear that everybody knew what was happening. And if there were additional fees, we could talk. The patient knew if there would be additional fees. Like, for example, a great thing that my partner Matt Najad will do many times is if he's doing veneers, is he says, I include two wax ups in this fee. So let's say he does a mock up, the patient doesn't like it. They say, oh, the central is a little too long. I wanted these to be shorter. And, I really wanted more rounder edges over here. I thought they would be a little more bulky. So the second mock-up is included in the fee. Now, the patient can do 100 mock-ups if they want, if Matt wanted to deal with that, of course. They know in writing and by communicating how much each mock-up is after that. And so it's structured and it's clear for
I
everybody.
have a question.
Yes.
So I've heard you talk about this a lot, as well as you're the one that goes over the treatment agreement with the patient initially.
Correct.
What I've never thought of before until you just said it relative to long treatment plans in terms of chronologically. How do you remind them of the treatment agreement? Are you the one that does it? Does the assistant go, okay, we're at step three or whatnot? How do you handle that?
Yeah, usually it's me.
Okay.
I'm of the thought that patients listen more to the doctor
Yeah.
than the assistant or the treatment coordinator or the front office. Now, a lot of people will say that's inefficient. I think with our business model, which is
Sure.
more high-end, taking more
Yeah.
time, it allows for that. So, totally understand if you are faster, if you're working more with insurance and you do
Yeah.
like to have this done by a treatment coordinator. But for me, I like to talk to it because I
Yeah.
think the patients remember when I say something, especially when it's negative.
Yeah.
When I say, like, you know, I'm going to place this implant, they work most of the time. However, you know, 4 to 6% of them need to be removed and we need to do another one. And if that happens, you're going to have to pay for it again.
Yeah.
It means a lot more, I think, when I'm saying it than when a treatment coordinator is saying it. But to answer your question, usually it's me that's reminding them.
Got it.
So I like to do it at the beginning and the end of the appointment. So the patient comes in, let's say, I don't know, we've placed implants and they're in a denture, and we're now creating the perfect denture so that we can attach it to the implants, let's just say. Then I will come in and say, hey, Ms. Jones, so it looks like the implants are doing well in there. Today we're going to start working on that denture, make sure that it's really perfect and the aesthetics are good and the bite feels good and you know it's feels good on your tongue. Remember, this may take 4 or 5 appointments, and
Yeah.
I'll many times have that listed, either printed or on the screen. And so it's very similar to what you talked about with the
Yeah.
denture checklist.
Yeah.
And I am, I think, one of the rare doctors that will also talk about fees with them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I will say, you know, if we get to this point and let's say the provisional breaks, you know, we have this built into where we will do one additional arch, upper and
Right.
lower.
Right.
However, if there's multiple fractures, the fee is $1,750 or whatever
Yeah,
it is. I don't
or
know. I'm
whatever
making
it
it.
is. Yeah. And I mean, depending on the practice too, you can do any which way to Sunday as well. Like, for example, the doctor may go over the initial treatment agreement, but then it is the treatment coordinator or assistant that,
Right.
says, hey, just to remind you, this is what we're going to be doing today. And then maybe at the end of the appointment, the doctor goes, okay, so since we did this today, we're doing that next time. And so now they're hearing it from multiple sources
Yeah.
if that works better in your practice. I think.
I like to, if you can as well, is put it in the text reminders too.
Oh,
Now,
nice. Yeah.
that's much more of kind of a white glove service, right?
Sure,
Because
sure.
most text reminders are just automated. You're coming
Sure.
in next week, Wednesday at 2:30. We hope to see you then. If you can, especially on these big cases, it's nice to remind them as well.
Yeah. And what I was going to say too is, as you were talking through some of these initial concepts, is this: if you're sitting there and you're like, I don't know how to standardize a treatment planning process, or you don't know where to start, there's lots of resources out there, whether it's, Panky or Spear or COIS. If you're unfamiliar with these philosophies, what's so amazing about all of them is that they're frameworks. And
Yeah.
so for those that, know me, I lived at Spear for well over a decade. And so the only difference between a, as we might say, quote, simple treatment plan and a more complex or comprehensive treatment plan is the depth of the treatment plan, meaning we're not doing anything any differently. We're not skipping any steps. We're following the protocol that, when I started didn't have airway in it, now it does. But you're following a framework, you're following a protocol, and that therefore right then and there helps to begin that over communication process, because you're doing it the same way every time, and it gives you less of an opportunity to n not communicate or miss, I'm not going to say miss a step clinically, but miscommunicating the step clinically.
Well, It's great that you said that too, because let's remind people what Martin and I harp on, I would say every episode, is that everything is a skill. So you know how you're good at talking to patients about, like, you're going to give an injection. I'm sure everybody has some kind of a script that they give when I'm giving an injection. Hi, Mrs. Jones. I'm going to put this little gel in the back here. Susie's going to be suctioning because sometimes that doesn't taste very well. And you're going to feel some pressure. And every once in a while, like I always told patients when I was giving lower blocks that sometimes they may feel like an electric feeling. Because every once in a while, you touch that nerve, right? And they're, ugh. I would rather tell patients that beforehand than them experience it and think something as bad is happening, right? So I'll say, okay, so I'm going to be giving this injection, and you may feel an electric feeling, and as I'm giving it, right? Okay, now just breathe through your nose. You're doing well, doing great. And in just a few seconds, you'll start to feel everything kind of relax, right? So I have this script that I've created in my head that I probably learned from someone else over time. But think of how you say that without even thinking about it. That is a skill. Now, I would argue, and I think Martin would agree with me, that having that conversation about setting the expectation with a team member or setting the expectation with the patient or talking about fees is a skill as well. You just have to get your script down
Absolutely.
and practice it. And the first time you do it, it's going to be awkward and it's going to
Yeah.
take time and you're going to fumble over it, just like you did in dental school when you were talking to a patient about an injection.
Yep.
And when
Yeah,
you
I
think
mean,
about what I just said, what am I doing with the injection? I'm over communicating the injection so
yes.
that if something happens that they weren't expecting, I've already talked about it. It's like I did a lot of extractions, a
Yeah.
lot. I mean, at one point I worked for a DSO where I was doing 90 extractions a day. Okay.
Oof.
So I love to talk about, you may hear some clicks or pops as I'm removing this tooth. And that's not a problem. These teeth are kind of brittle. Now, if I'm sectioning a tooth, like if I have a lower molar and I'm sectioning it from mesial to distal so I can take it out root by root, after I use a burr, I'm usually going to go in with an elevator and crack it, right? And I'll say, okay, Ms. Jones, you're going to hear a little click here. I say click, not crack, because I felt like it sounded better. And I would do it, click. Now, if I didn't tell them and they hear that click, they think my jaw's broken, he broke an adjacent tooth, something is wrong.
Or
But
they
me
jump.
over communicating that is preparing them for it. And selfishly, it makes them react better so that it's better on me.
You know what I just thought of? We've been using the term over communicating, right? But in a lot of ways, it isn't. You know what this really is? This is taking away the assumption that they know what we're talking about. That's what
So
this
true.
is, right? So I think it's less about over communicating and more about removing the assumptions from your own brain that, I shouldn't have to say this. I love Gary DeWitt. Well, Gary DeWitt's the one that taught me this, don't should all over yourself.
Yeah.
So stop the shoulds and say it. And you know what? If they end up like you were talking about earlier, where they parrot it back and go, I know it's blah, 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 then that's the best day ever because it proves that you actually communicated.
So true. I mean, we dental professionals forget that we do this every day. And what you may be doing in your chair could be the first time they've ever had a crown, let's say. You've prepped thousands of crowns over the last decade, 2, 3, 4 decades. It is just the easiest thing for you. This may be the first time in their life they've had that. Or maybe it's the first time they've had an injection. Or maybe it's the first time they've had a rubber dam on. Or maybe you know what I mean? And so we get so desensitized that we need to make sure, like, we're talking to a 6-year-old child that has never experienced this. They don't know what's it supposed to feel like. How long is it going to last? Is it going to hurt? Is there going to be pressure?
Or the flip side, they've experienced something similar before, and now they're coming in with expectations that may or may not be relevant, appropriate, or applicable. But yet, well, that was different than last time. Well, we all know, almost every procedure is different within some context. So I would say it's even both. It's those that have no experience, and maybe more so for those that do, because let's say they went in before and had an extraction and it was easy peasy for whatever reason, and now it's not. Now all of a sudden you don't know what you're doing as the clinician.
Yeah,
So,
I mean that's a great example when you talk about assumptions.
yeah.
It's like they may have had, an upper lateral
Yeah.
extracted, which can
Yeah.
take, depending on the bone, can take no time. Or even when you think
Yeah.
of like an upper wisdom tooth. I
Yeah.
mean, most of the time, upper
Sure.
wisdom teeth take all
Just
of 5 seconds
rolled
to roll out, right?
right out.
You have super soft bone. Generally, the patients are younger, right? Now, let's say they had a wisdom tooth extracted when they were 17. Now they're 35 and they have a root canaled first molar. Mandible is much denser, much more likely to fracture because of the work that's been done. Let's say there's caries there as well, right? This is a totally different extraction. Also, it was whatever I just said, 15, 17 years ago. So they may not even remember it correctly. So I love what you're saying, which is like try to make it so that there cannot be any assumptions. And it goes back to this, what we just talked about in our Lightside Live course, which is Crucial Conversations, where we talk about facts. Facts. Let's not assume anything and let's communicate so well that they know exactly what's going to happen, or you give them the options of what's going to happen.
100%. I was just going through that with a newer client of mine today, as a matter of fact, and just, like you said earlier, that's a skill. And so we went through this scenario. I said, "How do you feel about it?" And he says, "Uncomfortable." I said, "Great." I said, "If you told me anything else, I would wonder, because this is different than what almost all of us do when we're trying to deal with these emotionally charged conversations, because of, frankly, evolution and our tendency to go into fight or flight when the emotions are kicking in."
And this idea of feeling uncomfortable at a new skill, think of any new skill that you did. Let's say you're learning how to skateboard in your 40s. Let's say you're playing chess. Let's say you take up, I don't know, singing. I mean, any new skill, you should feel uncomfortable at the beginning. And it's rare to be good at something new.
I just recently got certified in a newer assessment that I've added to my tool belt, and I'm doing kind of one of my first debriefs tomorrow, and I was a little kind of nervous and anxious, and I was like, "Okay, listen. You got this, because basically you're using a report to then debrief a client that's utilizing coaching skills." Well, those I got. And so, I leaned into the things I was comfortable with new information and new framework, and now I feel really great about it. And so that's not exactly the same thing, because I'm taking older skills on a newer situations, but the philosophy still holds. What in your other, shall we say, experiences, non-clinical, clinical, whatever we happen to be talking about, what's similar and how did that go? And what could you draw from in those prior successful experiences that you can then deploy in this new, different experience?
Yeah, I just thought of an example of under communication that caused emotions to be high. Many people that listen to this podcast know that I am the clinical director of a fairly large lab in California. And we had a call today, or I had a call today, of a doctor that was not happy that one of his night guards came as a flat plane night guard. Okay, so he likes to have anterior ramps, canine guidance ramps. I think how a lot of people do night guards, but everyone has their own idea on how night guards are done. And he had done two with us before that had the design he wanted. And so I got on the phone, very nice guy, and I said, "Hey doc, what's going on?" He said, "Well, I just want to see what happened with this last night guard." And I said, "Well, tell me what happened." And he goes, "Well, this is my third night guard I've done with you guys. The first two were amazing. They were great. I had to make little adjustments, but everything else was really nice. The patient was very happy. Now, the third one I got back, it was a flat plane. And, my previous two that I got were anterior ramps with canine guidance." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, let me look back at the lab slip." The lab slip just said lower night guard, I think, something like that. A 3D printed lower night guard. And I had to tell him, "Oh, well, how we do it at the lab is if there's no specific answer, our default is flat plane, because that seems like more than 50% of people want a flat plane night guard. That's not what I use in my practice, however, but that's what most people ask for. So we default to that." And he was like, "Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, that makes it easy." So what we ended up doing was changing his preferences. Most people probably know that your lab has built-in preferences. He didn't have any preferences. That was the thing. So on
Interesting.
our end, that's a mistake that he didn't have preferences. And on his end, it was a mistake that he didn't put it in the lab slip, right? So now we've had this communication. It finished so great. He was the nicest guy. He was like, "Oh, no worries. This patient's actually pretty cool. Yeah, this is how I'd like it." We talked exactly how he wants it. I talked to my team member who puts it in his preferences. Now, going forward, if he gets something that's flat plane, we know it's our mistake because it's there right in the preferences. Of course, sometimes lab technicians can go on autopilot, but it was a simple conversation. And what I see the most when doctors are mad at the lab that I work for is that there's lack of communication on the lab side. So another example, recently I was talking to a doctor and she said, "I really need to get this case. You guys have had this case for a long time. What's the deal?" It's actually her mother's case.
Of
And she
course.
said, "Yeah, of course." And she said, "My mom is leaving to go out of the country and she's not going to be back for like 3 months. And I really need to get this case in." And when I look back, what happened was it was an implant case, okay? And we needed to order some implant components from an implant company. Those components were on back order.
Oof.
So what did the lab do wrong? We didn't communicate that they were on back order. We just left the doctor waiting, and the doctor's going, "What the heck is the problem here? I mean, usually you get it back in 2 weeks. It's been 4 weeks. What's the deal here?" And so I had to talk to the team at the lab and say, "Listen, guys, we can't keep people waiting. If we're going to be late on something, we tell them we're going to be late and we tell them why." And most of the time, when I talk to doctors and say, "Listen, I'm really sorry. I know we told you we were going to get it by this day. We can't make that because of XYZ," they're like, "Oh, okay, cool. We'll reschedule the patient." The bad thing is when you don't tell them, they don't reschedule the patient and it doesn't show up. Then, of course, they're pissed. So it's just that lack of communication. And that's what causes, I'm telling you, 100% of the high emotions with doctors and lab technicians.
You know, it's you're making me think of my lab days that for some reason there was a couple instances that we had where it was similar, but the doctor wouldn't call us back.
We've had this happen too.
And therefore, in those situations, we actually, it was a combination of like parts and questions. And so we called like three, four times. And then when I finally got a hold of this gentleman in this case, he said, "Well, am I still getting it back on time?" And I said, "Sir, we've called you four times over the last 3 weeks, and based on our conversation, and we were not able to proceed with the case because these questions were critical." No, and unfortunately, in that case, he didn't understand. But by the same token, it's a two-way street, is I guess my point. So.
Yeah, no, that's a I've had that exact problem. Is like, doctor wanted cement retained. The screw access hole is coming out the incisal edge or on the facial even. Is the doctor okay with doing, now you can do angled screw channel or something like this? And we call or we email, we hear nothing until they call us and say, "When am I getting this case?" And we say, "Listen, I know we could have sent you a screw retained crown that had a hole through the center, but I'm sure that's not what you wanted, right? So yeah, completely. And it just goes back to this idea of over communication. I mean, this is the secret to having a smoother practice, and really, it's a secret to having a smoother life. I mean, let's be honest, this is not just in dentistry. What final thoughts do you have?
Well, you just made me think, even in our personal relationships, like, if some special occasion comes up and you really want to do X, but you haven't communicated that to your significant other, and then you get mad because they did something else or
They didn't
didn't do
read your
what you
mind.
wanted. Huh? Yeah, exactly. Nobody's a mind reader. So I guess my final thoughts are, is it over communication or combating assumption? Is it you sitting there just coming to a judgment that, well, they quote should know what I want? Well, should they? So the over communication, when done routinely, when done respectively, when done as part of culture, just becomes part of who you all are and doesn't become micromanaging. So I
Yeah,
think
it's
that's.
so true. And my final thoughts would be going back to what you talked about with Project Aristotle, structure and clarity. I think that's so good. I also love how you talked about reducing assumptions. Let's reduce as many assumptions as possible. If you think that they m could even consider that it's going to be different than what you think it's going to be, nip it in the bud and do it now. Talk about it now. And there's frameworks and there's ways of doing this. Now, we teach a lot of this in our Lightside Live course that's happening August 8th and 9th in Irvine, California. So we would love to have listeners from the podcast join us on our last one in May. We did have many listeners to the podcast, so that was really, really cool. And you can sign up there. Just go to wellnessanddentistry.com. Go to our links, and you'll see the link to sign up for Lightside Live. We appreciate you guys so much for listening. We love hearing from you. DM us, message us, email us on what you like, what you don't like. And we're here to just provide a bunch of free content for you. You know, Martin and I both have paid content. We have online courses, we have coaching programs, we have live CE. But this podcast is all about just giving free content to you guys to know what we love, what we are into, what we're passionate about. So we thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Take care.